Law Focus Podcast. Law Focus. Point of information.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Law Focus. My name is Millicent Ndiweni and it has gone 3 minutes after seven. Welcome to Vive M on 88.1. I'm together with Tepa Mohapi. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm very happy to be back.
Yeah.
It always seems like it's a very long time, but I mean, it's only a week. I get excited when it's time to come back to on air. But anyway, Law Focus is a program which aims to deal with all of our legal issues, and our objective in the show is to inform you, our listener, about your legal rights, and we try to discuss it in a way that makes sense to you and hopefully informs you and gives you an ability to maybe unpack it, understand it, and use it to your own benefit when you need it.
Yeah, and on today's episode, we're going to be having an interesting conversation. I don't know whether you think about it, I know I do, which is about security guards and what legal powers they really have in the country.
Yeah.
It's something I've always wondered about. Sometimes you get into shops, people check your bag and they search you on your person, those kind of things. No. We need to talk about whether those things are actually legal at all.
Life in South Africa is always full of a day doesn't go by where you don't come across a security guard. We even have security guards that are somewhat unique to this country, and they're called the car guard, aren't they? Okay, they're not security guards in the strict sense.
No,
I mean, it's a very uniquely South African thing.
And I mean, last week, Tuesday, there was a robbery at Crystal Shopping Mall, and a security guard was injured, shot in his arm. And they managed to run away. Fortunately, they acted very quickly. The law enforcement officers, the police, managed to spot the car that was running away somewhere in Soweto, got the goods back for the company. One of the suspects was shot dead in the process, and the other one was arrested. The other one is still on the run. And this is common. It's not the only shopping mall where we've had robberies, and security guards might not necessarily have been able to do something about it or are even hurt in the process. And I think that's why we need to have this conversation this evening to unpack what role they have. Otherwise, what's the point?
But it is a massive industry in this country. In South Africa, we have employed, we have just under 500,000 security guards. It's a huge industry. And then 9,000 registered active businesses, security businesses. And that means that there's a security officer. They outnumber the police officers by a ratio of 2.5 to 1.
Okay,
so for every, you know, 10 security police officers you've got 25 security guards. So that's how important they are. And as people who consider their occupation to be security guards in South Africa, we are touching 2 million of those 2 million 500,000. So it's a big industry.
It is. I guess if you are struggling to find employment, you could always think about being an entrepreneur and opening a security company.
Right. But we don't want fly-by-nights, and we don't want them to be unregulated.
This is South Africa.
Yeah.
Well, also, Police Minister Bikicela, earlier in the year, in June actually, came up with new rules and regulations for security guards that were gazetted. We're going to also deal with that. But as Tepo was saying, the numbers at the moment is 1 to 303 police officers, that's the ratio, whereas international...
Yeah, that's to citizen. One,
citizens.
Yeah. Yes. So one police officer to
383 citizens. Yeah. Internationally, it's 1 to 220. And the SAPS should be getting more police officers, at least 14,000 hired within the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Although, interestingly, in order for us to meet the international standards, articles are saying that research says that 60,000 police officers is what South Africa actually needs. At the moment, if you are interested in the numbers, we have 193,000 police officers in total.
A few weeks ago, we discussed the crime stats in South Africa, and that is a worrying figure, and it's probably why the security industry is so important now. Now, they have, over the years, drawn attention, mainly because they're on the front line of criminal activities, confronting criminal activities. Some of the reports have not been very positive. Some of them have, but some of them are not good. Instances where security officers seem to use an extraordinary amount of violence disproportionate to the circumstances. They're heavy-handed at times. And their strikes can be wow. I mean, if I think back a few years, about 10 years ago, where they had a massive strike, and it was a catastrophe. I mean, it is unmitigated disaster. That. So, yeah, they have drawn attention, and not all of it good.
Not all of it good.
No.
Well, that is one of the reasons that we're going to then be having this conversation, and obviously we're going to need experts. So right here next to me, Tepo Mohapi, you know he's an attorney.
Yes,
shine.
No, shine.
And he owns his own legal firm, Shine Some More. And he did his dissertation on the subject matter. Yeah. And so he's going to be our first expert this evening. Yeah.
Dissertation actually was on the use of force in effecting an arrest, which is a very important topic when it relates to security guards.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. And then we're going to speak to Mr. Philemon Bembe from SATAWU. He's the National Coordinator for Security at that particular organization, and he's also going to weigh in on everything that he knows and how we should protect these people and how they should be protecting us. So you don't want to miss it.
Yeah, and don't forget that this conversation really depends on you as well. It is for you, not just for us to sound nice and the sound of our own voices. It's for you to participate. And you can do that by following us on Twitter, and you can keep the conversation going at Vow FM using the hashtag LawFocus. Our podcasts are available at iono.fm. I never know whether I'm saying it right. Iono, Iono, but you know what I'm talking about. You're tuned into Law Focus on Vow FM 88.1. And coming up after this break, our legal hotspots. Remember, I'm Tapu Mohapi, and with me is Millicent Ndaweni, and we are hosts.
Ndaweni, murder my surname. Go ahead.
Ndaweni, my sincerest, and we're your hosts for Law Focus tonight.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week. Legal hotspots.
Right, welcome to our legal hotspots. We're going to discuss the hottest legal stories for this week. And this week, like every week in South Africa, Shem, there's something to talk about. It's
every
never
day.
Quiet. Every day here, there is something to talk. We don't just talk about things that are just vanilla. But anyway, the Justice Department is petitioning to President Cyril Ramaphosa to give FISMA's full activist Khanya Xekeshe a presidential pardon. Now, Xekeshe was sentenced to 8 years in prison, three of which were suspended, and this was for his involvement in the FISMA's full campaign. He pleaded guilty. This is an interesting one, because he pleaded guilty, I suppose, on advice from his legal team. And he pleaded guilty to public violence and malicious damage to property. Now, his new legal team said the trial was unfair, and they want to appeal the sentence and the conviction, and they wanted the court to grant him bail. That's the magistrate's court, to grant him bail pending the outcome of the appeal to a superior court. Now, the court denied him bail and dismissed his leave to appeal. Interestingly, the Justice Minister, Ronald Lamola, then stepped in and said they want to assist him in
a presidential pardon.
Yeah, getting a presidential, which would have the effect of expunging his record, you see, setting everything aside, making as though it didn't exist. It's an interesting one. I've never seen this happen before. And of course, it's going to create a lot of opinions, because one can argue that if this conviction is set aside, what about all the other little convictions that happened
during service delivery protests?
Yeah, or even during the FISMA's fall, you know, there were smaller ones, you know, public violence, all sorts of, you know, urinating, all these little things during public FISMA's fall campaign that occurred, and maybe people pled guilty to
charges,
you know, to finish the process quickly. What about all of those? On the other hand, is it really that bad to give a pardon, given that movement did effect a lot of changes?
True. It's a very emotional one. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
And if you know that you have benefited from the Fees Must Fall movement, it's hard for you not to, empathize with the leaders of that movement, because they played a very, very, very important role in bringing about the necessary change that was needed. Otherwise, some of us would not be here studying.
I wonder who the complainant was in that matter, because at some point the complainant could have said, well, you know what, I want to mediate this matter, conciliate this matter, rather than taking it all the way to trial.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway. That's a tough one. In another case, your favorite is in the news again, and that's former President Jacob Zuma.
Hello. Hello again, Mr. Zuma. We've missed you.
So a few years ago, before he became president, there were corruption charges against him, and those were taken away. And now he's back again because it's been alleged that he benefited from about 51, not that he benefited this total, but he benefited from an amount of about 51 billion rand in total, which was to purchase fighter jets, patrol boats, military equipment, etc.
For the arms deal.
And before he became president, that was closed. And now it's been reopened. He tried to go to court on Friday to get this to be dismissed as a permanent stay of prosecution, meaning never ever again should this ever come up. But he was not successful. And so that's why he was in court in Pietermaritzburg today. The state has said this is not politically motivated, and so his legal team is going to have to come up with more miracles, intellectual legal miracles, to try and find another way to appeal the matter if they do. But for now, what we do know is next year February the pre-trial is supposed to take place, and then in April the actual trial will be commencing.
Yeah, hopefully it will take. It's an interesting manner of litigating, almost Stalingrad style litigating from Zuma, given that he has always said that he wants his day in court. So it's a really interesting way of litigating. But anyway, everyone has a right to a fair trial. Yeah. And if he wants to exercise those rights, we can expect an appeal here. You don't need you don't need to be a genius to know that, or a sangoma to know that Zuma will appeal. Okay. The Constitutional Court has made a landmark ruling in favor of Stellenbosch University's new language policy. If I remember correctly, it was around about 2016 where the language policy of Stellenbosch University was amended, making English the primary medium of instruction. And this was taken to court, and the court then dismissed the application or the argument that against it. So the court upheld it, and the reason that it did so, upheld the new language policy of English being the primary medium of instruction, is to promote multilingualism and to support academic staff and career success of students and the staff. And it's really to take into account the fact that there are many, many different languages in this country. So that is actually quite a good ruling. I'm in full support of it. Those men in orange, they can cry us a river. Right, now let's take a look at what is happening on our Voxy questions. What we asked our listeners was, how effective are security guards in combating crime? Can they be relied upon in the absence of police officers? Let's take a listen to what they had to say.
I feel like security guards do not have enough power to help fight crime because, firstly, they are not armed themselves, which makes them also vulnerable to crime. I just think they are put there, maybe at a certain complex or company, to help create a certain image. Criminals know that the security guards at a certain place, they are likely to avoid the place. And also, they are more focused on wherever they are placed, whether it's that company, complex, or place, not to help fight crime for the greater good of the community. And they do not have much power compared to policemen, also in terms of shooting guys and stuff like that. So I really think this is not sufficient, and maybe them being given more rights could be good for the community.
Security guards are not effective in combating crime because they don't have the necessary training, skills, and equipment to protect themselves and the tenants. They cannot be relied upon in the absence of police officers, because I think it's not their duty to combat crime, but their duty is to merely maintain law and order.
As much as I honestly appreciate the presence of a security officer when I go to certain institutions, I don't think they're necessarily effective at fighting crime. If anything, they're just there to make sure that people know where they're going, to make sure that whatever security systems are present are being put to work. Even when it comes to crowd control, you still need a team of police officers who are, you know, crowd controlling. I think they should be given much more in-depth, thorough training. They should be taught to deal with actual situations and not just tell you umthetho awuvumi. I don't think their presence deters any criminal activity. And after dark, they also go into hiding. Like after the sun sets, you can't see where the security is. So I think they also fear for themselves because they know they aren't trained enough. So I appreciate them being there, but they need to be trained better. They do not fight crime at all.
Okay, I think that they do play a role in combating crime or in preventing crime, but it's very limited. Say, for example, they are guarding e-property, ne? So ideally, they respond quicker than the police, and they could actually babambe amam ikebeng in the act. So baso babopa under citizen's arrest and wait for the amapoisa ukuthi afike azobathatha, and then amapoisa, because they are so in to reinforce the law, amapoisa can actually do something about that. But that is only in an ideal world. In this real world, yes, bias to sell. It's like people should not even consider going to rob that place or going to go commit crime in that place because they'll be spotted and then they'll be arrested. So I'm a security assistant. They spot a crime, yenzeka, and then they report it to amapolisa. And then how fast amapolisa responds also. I'm not sure if I'm answering the question, but yeah, they have a very limited role, and we can only reply on them based on ukuthi amaphoyisa wona azoreply fast kanjani. So if i-security libambe isigebengu under citizen arrest, iphoyisa kumele lifike promptly so that azokwazi uku-reinforce the law, because the security can't actually reinforce the law.
That's an interesting one. I think they share my views, which is that security guards generally don't have much power. That's just my take on the matter. What's your tip on? Do you think that citizens arrest yasebenza?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that we're being fair by expecting them to have a massive impact on crime itself. They aren't law enforcement, and most of their work doesn't involve actual arrest. It would involve recording of an incident or being visible to prevent an incident from occurring. Mm. But, okay, we're going to unpack it and we're going to see whether or not people's perception of security officers is justified.
All right, that's perfect. So welcome to the show, Tepo Mohapi. You are our first guest.
Welcome
Thank
back.
You for joining us this evening.
It's why I wasn't here for the last 30 minutes.
Well, you are now working on it in a different capacity.
Right, yes.
Let's start off with private security in South Africa. How important is it for us to have it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to have it. We have a crime problem in South Africa. I don't think anybody can deny that. And then we also have a situation where law enforcement is not able to cope with the levels of crime that we have. So we've got a very, very high ratio of citizens to police officers, which is at 383 citizens to one police officer, whereas we should have about 220. We have 500,000 or so security officers in the country. We only have just under 200,000 police officers. So there's a very, very big gap between what we need from a security point of view, just to feel safe, and what law enforcement is able to provide. And that gap can only be bridged by trained security. So it's a very important aspect of, if you think about assets and so on that need to be moved, they can be worth millions. It can be cash, it can be gold, whatever it is, but it can be a lot of money that needs to be moved, very valuable things, and that needs security. Law enforcement can't get involved in that. Yeah.
And would we say security officers are truly empowered by the law? And if so, how effective are they in exercising the duties that they legally can, should be doing?
So there's, I'm not really going to speak about regulations and so on, because I mean that isn't really interesting stuff, to be honest, just to be frank.
The law tends to be boring.
So I'm assuming that what you want to really know about is how a security officer can deal with a given situation. So he's faced, for example, with a thief or a robber or someone who's committing an assault or any other sort of crime. How can they respond to that? Hey. All right, so a security officer is, in fact, no different to you and me. In the eyes of the law, really, he's not that different to yourself and me. Okay, he must be regulated and all of that, must be a member of the authority. But in reality, he's not hugely different from you and I. He's not a peace officer, he's not a member of law enforcement, i.e. a Metropol or
SAPS,
SAPS or
SANDF.
SANDF is a gray area.
Warder, stuff like that.
Prison warder. Yeah. All of those people are peace officers, the law enforcement officers. It's a different category of people. But a security officer is not one of those. And so the normal things would apply. That would apply to you and me. So if you and I see a crime that's occurring, we may, for example, act in private defense. Private defense includes self-defense. So a security officer witnesses Tsepo being robbed, and the security officer then apprehends my assailant. Nothing wrong with that at all. He may do that. And if I am being robbed, say, with a weapon, he may also respond, because in proportion with that, he may also respond using a weapon as well. But it would depend on the facts. So anything that a normal person is allowed to do, a security officer would be allowed to do as well.
Now, would you not say that that in itself is problematic, the fact that a security officer is just a normal citizen like you and I? Isn't that already a bit problematic in how much power they actually don't have, to be quite honest, in executing their work?
Well, I say that they're just like you and me in the sense that they aren't considered law enforcement. They are not part of the law enforcement sort of field, you know, from a legal point of view. Of course, what sets them apart from you and me is training. That is what sets them apart. They have knowledge of the law, often, if they're well trained, how much force they can use, when they're permitted to use force. They have knowledge, for example, in observation, to observing how people are behaving in a given, say, at a stadium, how to confront a problem. If they are trained correctly, that is what sets them apart, and that is what makes them different to you and me. So it's the training that is very important, that it sets apart the security officer from you and me. So no, I wouldn't agree with that to look at them similarly to you and myself is problematic.
Okay, interesting one. And what would you say then, the challenges that they have are?
Right. So, I mean, I've now almost romanticized security officers because, because they receive a lot of training and all that. In reality, many do not. They have to pass a physical exam, basically, or physical test that they're able to move, they can run, they're not on drugs, all that kind of stuff. But to actually receive training is costly. And a lot of security companies don't provide adequate training. Someone is simply stationed at a location, and their job is to observe. That's what they do all day, every day, observe. And when they're then confronted, well, let's say, with a dangerous situation, the reaction can sometimes be poor. Or it can be heavy-handed. So what is a common occurrence in Serbia? Let's say you have a situation where a person is suspected of having committed a crime. Let's say here in Braamfontein, young man is suspected, say, someone who's not very wealthy. It's normally the victims of these things. Yeah. And you see a police officer will beat them black and blue because someone shouted Vimba, you know, which is it's acceptable to arrest the person and then call law enforcement to now and take it from there. But lack of training might make security officer go beyond what he's meant to do. You see? Or, for instance, not deal with a robbery or whatever. Appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if the companies are not providing the adequate training that the security guards need, how are they supposed to be held liable? Is there no way of regulating that industry in a particular way to make sure that these are things that are actually done?
Yeah, I mean, it is regulated already, but it's regulated more in terms of it's a general type of regulation where they say you have to provide these conditions and so on. So it's not very specific, I would say, and that's in my opinion. But you have to look at the security industry a little bit holistically or broadly, because you have security officers, for example, an individual who is posted outside of a nursery school to watch the cars so that they're not stolen, for example, the staff cars, is in a very different situation to an individual who is inside a Fidelity or what do they call, cash in transit van. Those two individuals, should they receive the same training? Is there a reason why? There really isn't a reason why those two should receive the same training. Someone in a cash in transit situation would very often be on the receiving end of an attack. You see, and they would need then to be trained on how to deal with it, whether it's in the mall as they're transferring money or whether they're on the road, how to deal with it. Someone who's standing and is looking at the cars that belong to the employees, it's unlikely that the person is going to attack. They're simply going to break into the car as surreptitiously as they can and leave. I don't think the two need to require the same amount of training or to be trained in the same way, because they're not dealing with the same kind of situation.
Even though it would limit their job opportunities, yeah?
Of course, it's different if the person then wants to advance to being in more dangerous. Or that's something else. They can then be trained according to. But to simply expect every security guard to be trained almost like Rambo, no, that's not even, it's not feasible. It's not something that's going to work.
Okay. Well, it has just gone 7:30, and if you have just joined us, we are in conversation with Tepo Mohapi on Law Focus, and we are asking him about what the law basically says about security guards, trying to unpack the legalities of this industry. Now, earlier this year, Tepo, we made reference to the fact that the police minister, Biggie Cele, gazetted new changes regarding security guards, the private security system as a whole, to ensure a different kind of uniformity amongst security officers. So some of those changes include greater visibility and identifiability in terms of badges that they should have, the security company registration number of officers, those kind of things need to be visible that we can see. And of course, uniform, I can't forget that one. Uniform should not necessarily be like any of other law enforcement officers in South Africa.
Yeah.
What do you think the impact of those changes will be to the industry, to the securities as a whole?
You know, I'd be interested to really look at what the intended implementation would be. Right. And I ask you, and I say this because I studied at Tux. And when I was at Tux, this is going back a while now, not that long ago, but a while now.
You only say that.
And the security guards there, the formal security guards there, they dressed in a way very similar to the Metro Police would normally dress. And I found it to be very effective, very, very effective. In that it was reminiscent of law enforcement. They were well trained. They didn't overstep the marks. They were very good at their jobs, and I found that their uniform assisted them in carrying out their duties. Mm. And you couldn't actually mistake them for law enforcement once you started interacting with them, because the uniform was different. It just looked similar, but not the same as the Metro Police. So to try and say, but you know. The uniform mustn't look like a police or law enforcement uniform, okay, there's some merit to that. But a person who would imitate a law enforcement officer is not a security guard. It's a criminal who's imitating a law enforcement officer rather than a security guard who's now trying to be a police officer. So I'm not 100% sure about why that would be such a great thing. Mm. Registration of them and the names, yeah, that could be good, so that someone is easily identifiable should they overstep the mark.
Yeah.
Our government is very famous for having wonderful ideas. Hey, I mean, South Africa, according to our politicians, is a land of milk and honey. But does it translate into our day-to-day reality? So unless they can really, really put these things into practice and really strictly enforce it, it'll be pie in the sky, to be frank.
Yeah, interesting. I will see how that pans out. The uniform one, I find it interesting as well, because you think that, well, if someone thinks that you're a security, I mean, you are a police officer, they're likely to behave in a very, you know, you manage your behavior, you watch yourself, that you are being lawful.
Yeah.
Whereas if I know who would see your security guard, angnandaba mina.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to just be like, ah, umangwena.
I suppose the logic is so that people don't confuse you for law enforcement officers,
which makes sense as well.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you my final question before we move on to the next person, which is that we know that the CIRA Act has certain limitations for security guards, which includes the fact that they cannot conduct a search, they cannot threaten, injure, demand information, demand documentation. Those are some of the rules against security guards. Are these things that, how does a security guard actually deal with a member of the public then totally refusing their authority at all? What happens in such cases?
Right, so I mean, a security officer really has to be limited in what they can and can't do, because they aren't law enforcement. All right, so it's not a bad thing to try and limit them. For example, conducting a search on somebody isn't really something that a security officer should do. Right, it can lead to all sorts of problems. The chief of which would be, for example, a security officer searching someone of the opposite sex unnecessarily. It happens all the time, but that's something that really shouldn't be happening. Or, for instance, a security officer then searching, say, my bag, and law enforcement arriving, and he says, well, I found this in his bag, and I say, he put it there. I don't know what he's talking about. It can create all sorts of issues like that, right? You know, where they overstep the mark, they're subject to the normal provisions that you and I would be subject to. So assault, GBH, sexual assault, if the facts would suit that. So potentially even an unlawful type of incarceration, which could be a kidnapping, you know, under certain circumstances. So they really need to be careful about how they conduct themselves, and that's a good thing. Even physically removing someone from a premises isn't always advisable for a security officer to do that, unless that person poses an immediate threat. It would be more advisable to contain the person if they don't want to leave the premise. Contain the person and then get law enforcement to remove the person from the premise. So the idea of law of security officers is to be an assistant, or to be someone who assists rather the law enforcement, not take the place of law enforcement. And we can't expect them to take the place of law enforcement, nor can we expect security officers to put their own life and limb in danger to save my car, or even to save me. I mean, at the end of the day, he's a security officer. He's not law enforcement.
Interesting. Oh, wow. Okay, that is the end of our conversation with Tepo Mohapi, who was helping us with the law. We have not exhausted the conversation. We are going to be speaking next to Philemon Bembe from SATAWU, National Coordinator for Security, and he's going to be joining us on the line to share his thoughts on this industry.
Law Focus is produced by the Wits Radio Academy.
Law Focus on Zolfen 88.1 Point of Information.
It has just gone almost, okay, there we go, 8:22 this evening, 8:22, ne? Yeah. And you are listening to VAR FM, Law Focus, with Tepo Mohapi and Millicent Ndiweni. So, Tepo, let's continue with our conversation.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in knowing about guns. I think you've made reference to that earlier on.
Yeah.
Do these people carry, are they allowed to? And then maybe you can tell us in what circumstances they can use it.
Okay, so, I mean, firearms in South Africa, it's not an automatic right to carry a firearm in South Africa. Nobody has an automatic right to carry a firearm. You need a permit in order to do so. And so you would then go through the normal process of qualifying, so via training, etc., to prove your competence, your ability to store it. Sometimes it can include some sort of checks into your history as well, often, not just sometimes, often. But there's nothing to preclude a security officer from having one. That doesn't mean that a security officer will always have one. He must still also, the fact that you're merely a security officer doesn't mean that
you're entitled to
be armed. No. You would need to, and especially in a security guard situation, you would need to get quite extensive training. If you've seen some of the more volatile posts that security guards occupy, for example, the most famous one is cash in transit. They often carry high-powered rifles, which are not easily accessible to the general public, and that is linked to their role in sort of high-risk situations. Mm. But it's specific training that they receive for that, and it's specific licensing that they receive for that, and they can even be restricted to when they may carry that type of weaponry.
Yeah. Yeah. I was interested earlier on in our conversation when you were giving a reference to, let's say, a mall robbery, and a security guard does have a firearm, and you were saying, well, remember, he's a security guard, sure, but he's also just a member of the public.
Yeah, yeah.
And not necessarily a law enforcement officer.
He's not law enforcement, yeah.
So if a person who has committed a robbery tries to run away when he wants to effect an arrest, he could use his firearm, yeah?
Yes.
And then obviously it has to be within the ambit of the law. You have certain limitations. You don't go overboard. So can you give us a kind of scenario like that in which that is probable, and it would be okay, and you will walk without a criminal record?
Right, okay. Can never guarantee that you walk away without a criminal record. That is that's decided by the magistrate or the judge.
I'm sorry.
But what I can let's talk about, say, a practical scenario.
Yeah.
I'm a security officer. There's a situation in which there's a robbery, say in a mall, and it's underway. Now, my initial, if I then take on these robbers as a security officer, or even as a member of the public, my initial reaction is actually can be classed as private defense. Okay, now in private defense, I may be acting to defend myself, or I may be acting to defend a third party, right? So, for example, someone like you, who's also in the mall. I may not know you, but you are subject to an unlawful attack by the robbers, and therefore I'm repelling that attack, and it's lawful for me to do so. The problem that you have with private defense is that it's linked in time and a proximity almost to the crime. So the crime must have started, the attack must be unlawful.
Mm.
It must have commenced. It shouldn't have ceased. And your reaction to the attack should be proportionate, right? So if somebody is for example, an older lady is hitting you with a stick, I can't shoot that old lady as a strapping young man. That would be disproportionate, even though she's unlawfully attacking you right when I shoot her. That would be unlawful for me to do that. I would then be convicted of murder or potentially homicide, right?
Yeah.
Because it's disproportionate. So there's that issue when you're talking about private defense. It's very linked to the circumstances under which it happened. So to prevent a situation where you are dealing with people repelling attacks and then being subjected to criminal proceedings against them, what we can do is you can effect an arrest, right? And that isn't so much linked in time and proximity to the actual crime. So the person can even be trying to get away, and you can still effect an arrest. Anybody can effect an arrest. A citizen may effect an arrest, or a police officer may effect an arrest. And the circumstances there could allow you to use deadly force in effecting your arrest. Let's say there is a little bit of a discrepancy. The attack on you has ceased. He then turns around and he looks as though he's exiting the mall, right? He's now shot you, or whatever, the robber's now shot you. He turns around, he looks as though he's exiting the mall. He's still armed, and I then shoot him as he's trying to exit the mall. I could raise the defense that I'm trying to effect an arrest. Remember that he's in a mall, he's already committed potentially attempted murder, depending on the facts. He's now moving, you know, away from you, but there are lots of other people there. Who's he going to harm next? The crime that he's now being arrested for by me is a very serious one as well. And I could even still raise private defense there if he poses a threat to the other people around him. It's a much broader type of defense that's available. That doesn't mean that you won't go through the whole shenanigans of potentially being arrested, charged with attempted murder or murder, me, charged with a murder, attempted murder, and then having to raise those defenses. That used to be the case long ago. Nowadays, they're trying to open an inquest docket to find out whether a murder charge would be acceptable or not. But it's going to be a long process for me to go through. Yeah, but a security officer can rely on those provisions in order to effect an arrest.
Yeah.
And even to use deadly force under certain circumstances to effect that arrest.
That is in proportion with whatever the attack is.
That would now be directly linked to private defense. Proportionality is directly linked to private defense. In effecting an arrest, there is some proportionality, but it's not as strongly connected.
Okay. Well, this effecting an arrest thing, maybe there's someone who is listening to us for the first time and is not sure what that means and how it's actually done in practice.
To effect an arrest.
To effect an arrest. So maybe you can just quickly explain to us, how does a member of the public effect an arrest? What do you do?
So arrest is normally used to secure the person for the purposes of attending court. To be charged, and then, well, to be charged first, and then in the charge office, and then to go to court at a later stage. So when you effect an arrest, what you're trying to do is to contain the person's movement pending law enforcement arriving. And if you are law enforcement, you are then containing their movements, transporting them, say, to the police station, and then charging them now in the charge office with a particular crime. Hey, it's to habeas corpus.
Does it need a physical holding the person? Is that part of it, or would that be now bordering on harassment or assault if you have to physically hold a person, put them in a particular situation? I mean, I think it also now has to deal with power. I'm not in a position to effect an arrest. I'm such a tiny person. But climb away now, umude, and you are stronger than me. It's easy for you to effect an arrest. So it depends also on perhaps your stature and I guess psychologically also people have something to do with what they assume your position in society is, your class position, right? There tends to be that kind of, oh, you respect someone because they look like they're worth respecting. Not the right thing to do necessarily, but that is kind of like how people operate. So what's your comment on those?
Yeah, well, I'm you know, if you're effecting an arrest, there needs to be a reason why. So you need to suspect that the individual has committed a crime. So whether they did it in front of you, or you believe that this person is a wanted individual. Say you've seen their photo in a wanted photo or something like that, it's then when you effect an arrest. Now, it may not be necessary for you to physically restrain them, but in all likelihood, it will be necessary for you to do that, because there are very few people that are going to say, sorry, you've got me. So, yes, you may need to physically detain them and put them in a in a controlled environment, say. So a lot of our larger stores with shoplifting cases, this is just a quick example, will take the suspected shoplifter and place them into, say, the staff room and then call law enforcement. And you couldn't say that that is a kidnapping. It absolutely isn't a kidnapping. You can't then come around and say, but it's a counter charge of kidnapping. They have a reasonable suspicion that you've committed a crime and therefore they place you under arrest. Now, all of the other considerations are superfluous. Whether you're rich or poor or whatever the case may be, if you are suspected of having committed a crime, you can be arrested and then you can explain yourself in court. Or should there not have been an arrest, you may have recourse at a later stage. But for the other considerations, those come secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The effecting the arrest itself is to gain control over the person's movements until they can be dealt with via law enforcement, whether it's to charge them and release them on bail or have them appear in court or whatever the case may be.
Well, I guess, yeah, I would still say that I guess it's not easy to always be successful in that. When I think of the situation in my head, I don't imagine it me being successful in facing an arrest. So I was just trying to be practical about it.
How would you effect an arrest? Someone who's small in stature?
Yeah, like, you know, those kind of things are, I don't know, I wouldn't say it's superfluous. I think it's part of the considerations of being able to successfully do it, you know?
I mean, if I'm a rugby player, huge guy, and you try to arrest me, I don't know that that would, you know...
Work. Yeah, nowadays, never.
I'm not sure.
I might end up with an injury.
Remember, there are very few instances in South Africa that would compel you to effect an arrest. Hey, you may effect an arrest if you suspect that somebody is in the process of committing a crime. And then you wouldn't, for example, need a warrant for an arrest under those circumstances. A police officer wouldn't need a warrant to search you where he suspects that a crime has been committed, and if he now has to go for a warrant to search, it would defeat the purposes of getting a warrant. So, you know, it's a practical
thing. And I think there's something that we can also quickly speak to about when a security guard's life and limb is under imminent threat.
Oh, yeah.
How do we explain that, and what do they do in such situations?
So, where a security guard himself is under threat, he may rely on private defense, self-defense. He may rely on that, provided all the requirements are met that I discussed earlier. So, if he's being attacked, obviously, by, you know, a child who's having a tantrum, you may not punch the child because the child is now...
The constitutional law
something
has said you're not allowed to hit a kid, so please.
Yeah. Or, for example, if you were upset with me and you were trying to slap me, it would be inappropriate for me to punch you. I mean, that
gender-based
would not,
violence.
I mean, that would not be appropriate. I mean, it would be something different if one of our burly guests here tried that. Of course, I'm a small guy, relatively small guy. Of course, I might react in a different way. But where a security officer is under threat, he may use a private defense in order to repel that attack. And he may use private defense to repel attack against a third party as well.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I don't think I've got any much more to add on today's topic. I don't know if you think you might have anything that is, like, really burning.
Yeah. Perhaps we should cut them a little bit of slack. I heard some of our Voxy guys. Perhaps a little bit of slack where... Perhaps some of the security guards that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, very often their job is to observe and is to try to record instances and to assist in a criminal case at a later stage where they will testify as to what they've seen. So sometimes to expect security officers to step into the shoes of law enforcement, no, sometimes I think we're asking for too much.
We're asking for too much.
And these guys, shame, they don't earn it. They really...
No, they don't.
Do not
their salaries
money.
Are
really... It is,
really.
I've represented quite a few of them in the CCMA, and wow, I give them respect because of the what they go through in order just to bring a little bit of bread home. So I don't think we can expect miracles. Let's rather get the police force to be enlarged and better trained. And
maybe get the security guards to train with police, maybe?
I mean, interestingly, there are some CPF and
yes,
so on.
Yes, we do have that.
Yes, we do have that, which in a way, that's also a kind of security yeah. kind of thing, you know, because, okay, there's some law enforcement involved and, you know, private personnel involved as well. And there you have good, strong collaborations between the two, and they feed off each other, and it can work very well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, more of that would be good.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Tepo. You are excellent. You are awesome. We had you for the whole show, and you did not get annoyed with us for asking you a million questions.
No, I love talking about things.
Thank you for sharing your legal expertise with us. Remember, if you are interested in catching this show or any other shows that we have done, you can go to iono.fm. Alternatively, if you Google www.vizjournalism, you will find Law Focus options there. It can help you with your legal assignments. I'm not lying. So you want to check it out. And then up next, we're obviously going to have a fun music fest with the voice of hip hop. We have the DLXL in the building, and he's the one who's going to be taking the show. And this evening, from our producer, Spiwe Moloi, as well as Simba Honde, and our Law Focus researchers, Sisetu Zingelwa, Nelka Mamate, Sitle Monama, Tepo Mohapian, as well as myself, Melissa Tindueni. Thank you for tuning into Law Focus tonight.
Law Focus podcast is also available on iTunes. Search Law Focus.